Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Diocese of Cleveland's Innovation Series. This is a series highlighting the innovative practices in Catholic schools, both in our diocese and across the country. And I am absolutely thrilled to be sitting here with Benny Morton today. He has dedicated 25 years to Catholic education, bringing a wealth of experience and leadership to his work. Benny began his career as a teacher and assistant principal at St. Anthony School in Harlington, Texas, serving for 6 years before moving into the role of principal at St. Anne School in Chicago's Pilsen neighborhood, where he led for 13 years. Fun fact, I was also the principal there, following Benny's incredible leadership. For the past 7 years, Benny has been a member of Independence Mission School's academics team, currently serving as deputy chief of schools. In this role, his focus includes leadership development, federally funded programs, community partnership, and strengthening Catholic identity across the network. And so today, we're thrilled to talk about just his experience and also Independence Mission Schools and how they serve the students in the Archdiocese of Philly. So with that, Benny, I'm going to turn it over to you just to tell us a little bit about you and how you came to the Independence Mission Schools and a little bit about your
Excellent. Thanks, McKenna. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here and sharing the mission of IMS with everyone. My own personal journey has always been a commitment to Catholic education. And when I was moving out east after my time in Chicago, I was looking for a role in Catholic education. And there was a relatively new network that had been established in Philadelphia called Independence Mission Schools, which was founded in 2012. To sustain and strengthen Catholic education in underserved Philadelphia communities by transitioning 15 former parish schools into an independent network. These are schools that were slated to close, and these were more or less the kind of a last option for families for a faith-based education. So our mission has always been to provide like a high-quality faith-based education, but we've evolved over time. I mean, we've only been around for 13 years, but you know, we have by enhancing our instructional support, professional development for leaders and teachers, and deepening our commitment to student-centered learning and operational sustainability. So when I was looking for, you know, a job, basically I really connected with the mission of IMS and the communities I served. And so I was blessed to be hired onto the academics team just about 7 or 8 years ago. And I've just really enjoyed my work with the people who are dedicated to the mission and continue to serve families across the city of Philadelphia who, if these schools had closed just over a decade ago, they would have had that opportunity to have a faith-based education. So I'm really excited to work at IMS and continue and strengthen the mission. And obviously, for me personally, just aligns with who I am as a Catholic, as a teacher, as a Catholic school educator.
I didn't realize it was established not that long ago in 2012.
Yeah, no, we're still kind of like in our infancy in some ways.
Yeah.
And so we're still learning, still growing, and just evolving. And so it's been amazing to be a part of that journey for the past 8 years.
So the IMS was developed, right, to consider other ways to keep these Catholic schools open. And so I'm wondering, what is the financial model of IMS without a parish, let's say, and how does it sustain that quality education?
Yeah, so IMS operates on a kind of a unique blended financial model. We combine tuition, philanthropy, and state-funded scholarships. So that helps make, you know, Catholic education accessible to all families, regardless of financial circumstances. So we do, receive funding through the state tax credit scholarship program. So that's obviously one of the things that keeps us going. We receive about $17 million a year, more or less, from that program. And we get about $7 million through tuition, and another million in philanthropy and scholarship money. So, we're obviously blessed by having the tax credit scholarship program in Philadelphia, but it's obviously a lot of work to get that money each year. But it does, you know, allow us the opportunity to provide high quality academic programs, student services, and relatively competitive teacher salaries. Once again, ensuring that students in our neighborhoods are historically under resourced, that they receive an excellent education.
Great. I was wondering too about a network model. So what other kind of supports do you have or does IMS provide for schools and for those local leaders?
Yes. Another thing that we're able to do is leverage the pooling of our title funds. So we pool all of our title funds and we're able to use that to kind of strategically identify resources and supports for our schools. Now, we do get some kind of reading intervention support, your traditional Title I support, but we've also been able to use that funding to hire different vendors who provide coaching. And so we've actually transitioned more to these like network coaches who are kind of independent contractors who provide coaching support in our schools. And so we have now a team, I think, of 11 or 12 network coaches who are federally funded. And so they are independent contractors, but they come in and they're kind of they collaborate and then they work at our schools because we obviously rely on our principals and assistant principals to coach, but we know that your day-to-day schedule as a principal never goes as planned. And all those coaching sessions and follow-up conversations and debriefs don't always happen. So when you have someone coming in who's just solely dedicated to coaching, it obviously alleviates some of that pressure from the leader. So that has been obviously a true blessing to our school communities to help our teachers. And then as we all know about the challenges related to staffing in schools, not just Catholic schools, and how there might be higher turnover rates now, and just like how do you get that support right away for new teachers or any teachers for that matter? Like having those teacher coaches is a way for us to support our schools. Above and beyond that, I think there's also just our model, our network is set up in a way that tries as much as possible. Not saying that other models don't do this, but we try to be very strategic in what are we taking off the plates of leaders. You know, I was a principal for many years. Obviously, we were at the same school, but there's a lot of development work that you're doing as it relates to raising money. So we try to take a lot of that off the school. So we have a central office like advancement team that's focused on raising money for the schools. We have, you know, tuition and enrollment staff at each school. We have assistant principals at all of our schools, regardless of their size. So these are like strategic investments to try to make sure that as much as possible, we can support the leaders, because we all know that the principal of a Catholic school is the main driver of change and having an effective school. So we, granted, with all those supports, it's still a really, really difficult job as a principal, but we do our best to try to support the leaders as much as possible.
Well, and talking about too, the schools are independent now of the parishes. So how does the network, I guess, approach faith formation in a way that's both inclusive and rooted in Catholic tradition? And maybe you can also elaborate just on how people can envision a Catholic school without necessarily a parish.
Yeah, no, that's a challenge and an opportunity that we work on constantly. Just to share a little bit more about our demographics. 75 to 80% of our students are not Catholic. So granted, we do have a couple schools where there's majority of the students are Catholic. We have a number of schools where there's very few Catholic students. But we still embrace Catholic identity as a foundation of our schools. So faith formation is welcoming and inclusive for all students, regardless of religious background. You know, we believe that there's more similarities in our faith and different religious backgrounds and differences. But we still have daily prayer, sacramental preparation, service learning, curriculum infused with gospel values. I was today at the Ash Wednesday service at one of our schools. But we foster an environment where students develop a strong moral compass and a deep understanding of faith, service, and social justice. Now, to your point about schools that might not have a parish next door, we do have a number of schools that do still have active parishes. So we still try to engage with the local priests to have a pastoral presence. And some are very present in our buildings and with our school communities. And we have to be creative for those schools who might not have a pastoral presence. We actually receive a grant each year to get a Vincentian priest from Africa who is kind of dedicated, has some work at a few of our schools who don't have a pastor. We have like a master mass calendar list that we've recently created so that we just know where, you know, different priest support is needed across our network. So we've tried to like continue to engage with the priests at the schools or near the schools so that they still feel a part of the community. We also host twice a year an IMS priest summit where we gather them and we talk about best practices. We share with them like the surveys that we give out to our school communities three times a year And we've actually engaged with them, like help us write some of these questions around faith. And they've like been part of the process, and we invite them to all of our events, and we show them like, here's our marketing plans. Here's how we do outreach to our school communities. How can you be a part of that? So it's a very kind of a collaborative conversation with our priests. And I think they really appreciate it. And just knowing that their feedback is valued by us. And even though we might not be the traditional parish schools, it doesn't mean we can't still have this relationship and have them be an important and active presence in our school communities.
Right. I imagine, too, it would look a lot like, you know, we have independent Catholic schools, too, right? And across many dioceses across the country. And I think people know what that looks like. So I can't imagine it'd be very different. But how does IMS and kind of the Archdiocese of Philly still collaborate? Or what does that collaboration maybe look like despite being separate kind of organizations?
Sure. Yeah. So we still adopt their kind of religion curriculum recommendations. Mm-hmm. We also have one of the priests from the Archdiocese who's on our board, and he and I have check-ins twice a month. We do. And so he and I go around to each school and meet with the principal and the pastor throughout the year. We kind of like go on this tour to visit all the local communities. And then we're in touch with the Archdiocese with some kind of logistical things around like weather related things or transportation. So we still try to keep an open, you know, communication with them. We are independent for, you know, pretty much everything we do, but we also know that there's a value in like aligning with the Archdiocese and having that communication. So I think there's still room to grow there, but we do have, you know, partnership in some areas with the Archdiocese.
You mentioned surveys when we were talking about Catholic identity and understanding that. So kind of shifting gears a little bit to thinking about kind of data and measurement, how do you measure the impact or success of the network? And you can think of it from a network level and answer that, and perhaps from a school level. How do you know each school is succeeding?
Sure. I'll touch upon the surveys a little bit and how that as part of a kind of a larger plan is we definitely have a very data-driven kind of mindset, and we do survey families, teachers, and students 3 times a year. And we get that data. We dedicate time for the leaders in the school and the central office to kind of dig into that data because we want to be responsive to that, to those surveys. So that's one thing in terms of satisfaction and feedback. We try to engage with our constituents as much as possible, our stakeholders, so that we can use that to inform our decision. In terms of like academic growth, you know, we use MAP testing. And so we administer those 3 times a year. We dig into that data, and we also monitor enrollment trends, teacher retention, and financial stability, sustainability, and all that. Like, how do we determine success or impact? We have network goals that we have each year around financial sustainability, academic performance, enrollment numbers. Usually, are 3 big ones, and so we monitor that throughout the year. We also, whenever we're doing school leader presentations, we always make sure we connect all of our work to one of the goals. And then from a school level, you know, schools, they develop their own action plans related around the data. And so they're supposed to kind of come up with some targets, some goals throughout the year that we progress monitor and we check throughout the year. And so all that means that we try to align all of that. You know that there could be so much data out there and we get lost in it ourselves. There's always too much. Sometimes we don't have enough time to analyze it. So it's an area of growth for us is to be more strategic and make sure we're progress monitoring and checking those data points regularly. But we do that constantly. We're always looking at data and we're trying to align, you know, and monitor that so we're reaching our goals.
What role do the principals play or the school leaders in that?
So they help establish their own, like with their school leadership teams, like what goals that they have set for the year.
Okay.
And so, and then they're, you know, we kind of work with them. I make sure that they're having leadership team meetings where they're kind of checking up on these goals. So they're very involved. Like we're not like setting the goals for the schools. We're consulting with them, but they know their school communities best. And so we're asking them to kind of like look at these data points and then like, what are your like kind of 3 priority areas for the year? How are you going to progress monitor that throughout the year? And, you know, we are there to support them throughout that process.
I've checked on various different schools' websites or the networks, and you can see some similarities. And so I'm wondering, like, if I were to go into one Independence Mission school versus another Independence Mission school, what would I see that's similar and what might I see that's different?
I think just like with any network, whether it's our Shasta network or like a network like ours, like every school has their own identity, history, charism, like everything like that makes them unique. And we want to celebrate that, right? So you're going to see that in our buildings. I think what you'll see is some similarities, obviously, kind of just the importance of developing a strong school culture, however that manifests itself in each school, like celebrating their culture, celebrating their heritage. Like you'll see a lot of visual displays within the schools. Potentially Black and Brown Saints, or you know, those in their communities who have supported that school. So I think you'll see that similarity. I know you see that like probably in all Catholic schools from the like kind of the not as exciting things. Like you'll see like kind of maybe similar operations or systems in place. We try to kind of centralize as much as possible for efficiencies and for financial sustainability. I think you'll see the uniqueness of each school, but at the same time, I think you'll see similar curriculum. Like we have a curriculum that we've standardized across schools. You'll see the kind of the importance of coaching, network coaching happening in each school. You'll see kind of you know, just this idea of supporting the same framework. We use a Skyrocket framework for coaching, teacher coaching. We're in the middle of 2 weeks of instructional walkthroughs right now. Here's an example to share with you. So 3 times a year, we do instructional walkthroughs where we have a team of people. So it's a principal. The director of school leadership is kind of like a regional manager that works with a number of the schools. Someone from the academics team, the network coach that's at their school. And so we're going around and visiting. We're spending a day in each school, and we're doing observations. We're collecting data, and then we're kind of sharing out results with the school community. And then the most important part, once you get those results, like what is the next steps? What are the action items that you're going to have? You're going to see in the next professional development session that the leader is going to lead. So there's obviously a method to this madness, but like that is another example of how we've normed something related to instruction across the entire network.
I think that's a good segue into like so many, and you know this from your own experience, of our principals are going at it alone. So what advantages are there to having similar resources or commonalities, or like you said, operating procedures, things like that for principals?
Yeah, I think there's a number of benefits. One is like, you know, there's the leaders have their own strengths and areas of growth, right? And so some of them, they can operate the school and not rely on a lot of the systems that we have in place, but some really rely on it, right? So I think it depends on the leader of like how much they need the supports that we provide. But having it a little bit more kind of uniform across schools just helps us support them better and more efficiently, right? If when the network started, there was probably like 3 or 4 different math curricula and ELA curricula. And so you're like, how do you provide supports for all those? Those teachers when they're doing totally different things. So like kind of having a unified approach to the curriculum and the professional development days, I think that's beneficial to the school leaders.
With IMS established in 2012, you said it's kind of early still in the years of establishment here. What are some of the roadblocks or challenges that Independence Mission Schools have encountered along the way or maybe that you're currently facing?
Yeah, I think just like with any kind of network, regardless of the size, you're trying to balance this autonomy and the centralization piece, right? We're trying to have systems in place, and you make decisions sometimes that like are the best thing for, you know, 80% of your schools, but 20% is like, that's actually worse for me. Like, well, we got to make a decision. So we obviously encounter those challenges a lot. I'm sure it was magnified as we went through COVID, right? We all experienced that. But we want, you know, ensuring schools retain their unique identities while benefiting from the structure and support of a larger network is a challenge. And I think the other thing is just securing sustainable funding remains an ongoing effort, right? We're trying to provide, you know, an affordable education while maintaining like kind of program excellence. And that's always a challenge. And I think the last thing is just like making sure that we are able to support all of our schools in equitable fashion, because every school is unique, has their own challenges and opportunities and things they do well and things where they need more support. And you're just trying to balance all of that. So when you have a model of, we have 14 schools and, you know, sometimes central office is stretched thin on how we can support the schools. So that's always an ongoing challenge. Make sure you prioritize, you know, who needs support, how much support, when they need the support. But it's just a similar challenge in, like, you have as a school leader, right? It's the same thing you have as a school leader.
I'm going to throw a question out at you that we didn't necessarily originally plan for, but it's because you mentioned it and I know you're good at it. So when it comes to kind of seeking outside funding sources or engaging people in the mission to help support a school or a parish or a network of schools financially, what are some pieces of advice or some key things that have worked for you and what you've seen work over the years?
I think one important thing to remember is that you have to be prepared to tell your story. You have to be able to share why, you know, why you exist as a school community, why it's so important for the local community. So just knowing your story. I think also an important thing sometimes, we've got to get people into our buildings to meet the kids and to see it in person. I know that's not always possible, but, you know, I've always seen like more success when people come into the building and see it and feel it. And there's a connection that's developed, right? And so I think if anything, if to get people into your building, and this is not like revolutionary like that, but I just found that that was so important. And the last thing I think is when we're thinking about like fundraising and get money is like, you have to have a plan that's clear. So you have to have a vision that's clear and you're able to articulate it in a way that people can understand and relate to and be willing to make a contribution to that, right? I think we can all sell a great story. They come into the building and all that. But then if you can't articulate your vision, it's really harder for people to kind of to buy in to that. So I think that's something that doesn't, it maybe some people can do it just naturally and it's off the top of their head, but it takes work, right? It takes work to really form that kind of messaging. And the more that it's not just the school leader, it's like everyone who has a stake in the school can articulate that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's intentional work. That is like, we're going to have a faculty meeting on like, hey, this is the thing that we talk about when people ask us about our school. Mm-hmm. These are the three things. If anything, make sure you mention these things like, so that you are kind of multiplying your message. You're multiplying yourself and how you get the message out to other people. And I think with that, you know, when we were at St. Anne, like some of our biggest like recruiters were our teachers, right? Because they were aligned to the mission, but they were also able to speak to the mission and speak to the great work in the school. So I think the more that it's a kind of a community involvement in knowing the ask or the pitch or whatever you want to call it, but the message as it relates to your mission, the more successful you'll be.
I'm hearing like get people to connect with the people there, right? And then believe in where you're headed as an organization and you should be able to get them in.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I know as Catholic school educators, we're not rolling in money, but if anyone were ever to approach me, I would want to know like, okay, if I'm giving this donation, like what's, you know, I want to know more about it. I want to be able to connect with it. And I want to be able to know kind of what's the vision, what's the plan.
Right. So the series is all about innovation. And we've talked a lot about that. I think the idea of this IMS network anyways is innovated in and of itself. But in what ways do you think IMS Network has been the most innovative and forward-thinking when it comes to supporting your students?
Yeah, I think, I think innovation is the support we have related to the academic programs in our school and instruction. Granted, we have a long ways to go, right? We're continuing to work on it. I think is innovative in terms of like, you know, when we rolled out the curriculum, we had network-wide professional development where we had all the like the third grade teachers, all the fourth grade teachers. And then when COVID hit, we had PLTs across the network where the fourth grade math teachers would gather via Zoom every other Tuesday. And we kind of continued that idea of working with other teachers across the network. You know, usually you'll have PD with just your school, but then like you only have one teacher per grade level. And so it's a little bit challenging. How do you dig into the curriculum or, you know, unpack these modules or whatever the case may be. So I think that was innovative in terms of how we like kind of got certain teachers together to really dig into the work. And I think also just this idea of coaching support and this idea of how important coaching is, whatever the level is, whether you're a principal, like we have leader coaching that we use, that we get through title funds as well for our leaders. And then we even have some central office people, including myself, who have had coaching over the years. This idea that everyone can get better, everyone can be coached. Like, that is something that I'm really proud of. And I think, you know, we're proud of as an organization that coaching just happens constantly. And, you know, we have our network coaches, we have, you know, three cycles of coaching, we have a coaching data tracker, like all of these like supports to help teachers, especially when we're dealing with the challenging retention rates and having to hire constantly for teachers. Like, what can we provide for them that maybe we can't provide in terms of salary? Well, it's like just someone being there to help you through the craziness of being a teacher, let alone a first year teacher. Like, that is so hard. The more support that we can provide for them, the better. So I think that is how I think we stand out in that sense of like being innovative with those supports for teachers. But that all is, it all costs money, but we've been able to leverage and pool our federal dollars to be able to do that.
From a personal standpoint, I'm so glad you mentioned coaching. That was something that as a school leader, I really invested in and believed in. You're investing in your people by investing your time of coaching. Anyways, just appreciate you saying that. Okay, so we, you know, Independence Mission Schools is a network in Philly, and there are other networks similar and yet different across the country. And I think it is good when school and pool resources perhaps, or have commonalities to come together and to be able to collaborate. And so I'm wondering, what can our diocese or other dioceses learn from and maybe even apply to our schools that you've learned from your experience in IMS?
Yeah, I think, well, how many schools are in your diocese?
86 elementary schools, yeah.
And so we have 14, but just like thinking back to your days as a teacher, like, you know, how important differentiation is, right? And so if you have, you know, not all your schools have the same needs, right? But I think there's a lot of benefits of kind of having these little cohorts created, right? Where, well, and you could base it on certain needs of the school, whether it's these schools really are looking for more support on financial sustainability. This one is like academics. This one is school culture. This one is like operations. I think, you know, the more we can really meet the needs of schools where they're at, we'll be more effective. We find the challenges with 14 schools is like there's different needs across the schools, and we aren't there yet where we can like differentiate enough in terms of what supports they need. But I would recommend like getting those schools together, and it could look like getting those, you know, there's four schools that you want to get those four pastors together to talk about different topics, like engage with them. And like, here's how we see you supporting our school mission. Here's how we can see you be a stronger pastoral presence. And also getting their feedback, like what would they like to see, like kind of engage in really, you know, important conversations. Or if it's, you know, some schools who are doing really well, you know, and say in math, and like you get them together and like, okay, what are the best practices you're doing, and then be able to help you share that out with other schools in your diocese or archdiocese. So I think there's ways to kind of bring people together and differentiate your supports for them. And it all just starts with conversations. Grant, I know we're all busy. We have full schedules, but I think there could definitely be benefits in the long run by looking at things in a way that, okay, we can't do everything for all schools because it's not possible, but it's also like, I don't know if that's strategic enough. We really need to dig into like, well, what do schools really need, and how do we kind of leverage resources and conversations and supports for those that need specific supports from your central office.
Yeah, like you said, little cohorts, really. And I think that word resonated with me. We have keeping the faith grouping. So parishes and schools have been put into kind of regional and similarity, sometimes not all the time, groups. And the idea is that every parish is assigned to a school, whether they have a school or not. And so I think there's opportunity there where maybe those groupings have multiple schools, where we can start thinking about collaboration a little bit differently, because there's a lot to be said for not reinventing everything all on your own little silo. And I think, to your point, thinking more strategically is where we're hoping people go.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to finish with one last fun question. What's the best part of your job? What do you love about it? And what fills your cup, Benny?
Best part of my job. Well, for those who have like moved from teacher to principal or school leader and then central office, kind of the distance between you and the kids increases.
Continues to grow,
which is one of the, you know, I don't know if you want to say downsides of this, but at the same time, you know, I love working with our team because you're with kind of like-minded individuals who believe in the mission. And so going to work every day and work with people who are like, just knowing that they're just as dedicated as you are, I mean, it's just really kind of uplifting and fulfilling, right? Because we can't do any of this work by ourselves. And so it just makes me feel, just obviously continue to be excited. Like, all right, there's other people here who are just doing great work. And I'm just blessed to be a part of a team of like-minded individuals who believe in our mission. So I do miss kind of interacting with the kids.
Well, you're getting some of it. I saw some Facebook photo of you competing in a basketball game or something at one of the schools.
Yeah, I get a little bit. They're like, who's this random guy? But that's all right. I do get to showcase my talent still. You're right. But at the end of the day, it really is, you know, having a place where, you know, you have a culture that just aligns with who you are as a person, as a Catholic school educator. And I find that every day.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I know you have a really busy schedule, but we really appreciate just sharing more about the network and what we can learn from it and joining us today.
Thank you, McKenna. It's been a pleasure.